If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahan, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Hey, I'm Jen, and I love horror movies.
I'm Mikey. I'm dead inside, and I also love horror movies.
And we really like to torture our friend Todd because he hates horror movies.
That I do. And that's why they call me the horror virgin.
That's the only reason we call him that.
I'm not. No other reasons at all.
None at all. Whatever. So
every week, we take him through the encyclopedia of horror, the good, the bad, the ridiculously Jack Frosts.
And then we make fun of it, more or less.
Or explain its deceptive feminism.
Oh. Yeah, exactly. That's what I do. That's my thing.
And I'm the funny one. Our episodes drop on Monday, so check us out.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you so much for checking out the series today. Thanks again to all the subscribers who keep up with all of the episodes. We do produce new interviews every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I always love hearing from you all. Thank you for the comments that you leave in the various places, whether that's in podcast land, like on iTunes and Apple Podcasts, which, by the way, you leave comments there. It really helps out the series. I also read all the ones who come in through the YouTube channel as well, and you can listen to Spotify. If you're not a subscriber, any of those places or wherever you get your podcast from, please take a moment to hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with the series, keep up with all of your favorite artists. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, I'm talking with the Psychedelic Furs. Founding member Tim Butler jumps on the phone to talk about the band's first brand new album since 1991's World Outside. That's right, they've returned in 2020 with Made of Rain. We're going to get into the ins and outs, why exactly there was so much space between the albums, the idea of picking up new fans, as well as to catering to old fans. In fact, it's a really interesting cyclical moment here. You know, when we talk about, you know, are they trying to look back at any of their previous eras for the sound? He says, we're actually looking at bands and being influenced by bands that were influenced by us. So that's a really interesting moment coming up in this interview. There's also more band input than they've ever had, or at least that they've had in a very long time that went into this album. That also includes one of the co-producers, Richard Fortus. Now, you'll know that name. He stretches far back, at least as the Love Spit Love albums. As a longtime fan, Tim's going to tell us he was the perfect person to pick to help helm this record. There's a lot of alliteration in that sentence right there. Curiously, there's also some inspiration taken from David Essex. And considering that era right there, we're also going to roll the clocks back to 1980 because it was 40 years ago this year. In fact, 40 years ago this month that the Psychedelic Furs released their debut album, the self-titled LP. I get to hear all about that, sort of helping to create post-punk, coming out of the punk movement, and being in a six-piece band with saxophone. Now, that wasn't an instrument that was completely obscure at that time. There were still plenty of bands doing that, even looking at something like the E Street Band in a very different type of rock genre. But coming out of the punk world and not being ska, well, it helped define their sound anyway, so we're going to get into that as well. So let's jump into this, talking about the record Made of Rain. It's Kyle Meredith with the Psychedelic Furs.
Hey, Kyle, how you doing?
Well, man, I can't believe I'm saying it, but the Psychedelic Furs are back. We've waited so long, a long, long time, with this excellent new record, Made of Rain. Congratulations on this.
Thank you. It's good to finally have it, you know, coming out and together and everything. You know, it's been a while. We've been working on it, you know, bit by bit for quite a few years.
When did you start working on this? Because, you know, it's, as the story goes now, it's almost been 30 since the last record. And of course, there was a time in there that you weren't a band and then got back on the live circuit. When did you first start talking about making a new record?
Probably the early 2000s, you know, shortly after we'd got back together. But we were a bit tentative about it because we wanted to make sure, you know, that we still had the chemistry and things to say, music to make that would stand up to our past catalog.
And that's a long gestation period. I mean, was the entire time, was it a meticulous process?
No, it's a long period because, as I said, we wanted to make sure that, you know, all the songs were what we considered good enough to be on the eighth Furs album. And there was no pressure. And, you know, we had taken the break in the 90s because we sort of got sick and tired of the pressure of, you know, album tour, rehearse, write new songs, album tour, you know, from record companies. So we were still a bit sort of shy about, you know, committing to a time frame or, you know, to that sort of thing. So, I mean, one of the oldest songs on the album, I guess, is Wrong Train, which was written in, I guess, 2004.
Wow.
Four or five. But actually, what's strange, we had a lot of songs, but most of the songs on the album came together, I guess, in the last, you know, 6 months before we started recording.
It's funny how that happens, you know, finally when you know it's time.
Which is great because, I guess the time was right. I mean, it's great as well because everything sounds like, fresh and, I mean, still fresh to us. When we go out and play it live, it's going to be, you know, we're just getting excited about doing that.
Well, there's obviously magic that happens when you all write together. You know, something quite, it sounds quite natural. But when you're putting together a record, and especially one that, you know, does come so far after the last one, do you find that there is an era in their past that you want to touch on?
Yeah, we have to keep, I mean, of course, keep our own sound. But we also, you know, you have to show that you're not, you know, just a bunch of old geezers, you know, retreading your heyday. So, I mean, you listen to what's the music that's going on around you, and you are sort of influenced by it, which, I mean, you'd have to be deaf not to be influenced, you know, over the years by different music. So we sort of take in, I guess, inspiration from bands that have been inspired by us in the past. So it's a sort of a circular thing.
Very cyclical like that. It's really interesting. I mean, music comes in waves and cycles. Things come and go and everything, but like post-punk is having another moment in the sun right now. So it's interesting that this does arrive during this time because I don't think it could have been better timed.
It's strange. In the 90s, bands were, you know, grunge bands and their ilk were put down bands from the 80s. You know, and now it seems like those bands are sort of forgotten. As you said, now it's more of like the 80s sound is back.
But, and to be fair, by the way, this record, Made of Rain, sounds vital. It sounds present. It sounds relevant. It, you know, Even reading some of the comments as the first single comes out with Don't Believe, I think that surprised a lot of people, you know, because bands do come back after a lot of years, and that's not always the case, you know, that whether or not it's good, and putting that aside, it doesn't always sound like now. And even though there is a classic first sound of this, everything about this sounds very now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was sort of a worry we had, that people, well, that we wouldn't meet expectations of, you know, being not groundbreaking, but, you know, relevant. Because if we'd come out with an album that sounded, you know, just like retreads of the 80s albums, I mean, they'd be good albums, but, you know, for people to hear and think, wow, they're back and they sound now.
As fans, I think, you know, we have an idea of a band, especially a classic band. And for you all, I mean, you know, it's almost like when you've got that much history that there's that potential that you're held to a memory that's basically a one small moment in your life from, you know, at this point, 40 years ago, over 40 years ago for you all. Does that have any weight, you know, when you are thinking about it, the new music?
Yeah, I mean, we have an idea of what our original fans expect, but we also have an ear to, I think, what is, I mean, younger fans who, you know, don't really know the Furs, but have just heard, you know, from other people about them and sort of seen, you know, new bands saying their influences are the psychedelic Furs. So we have to, I guess, impress them, but I don't think they'd be impressed if we just came back with, you know, something sounding like us in the 80s. So it's like a bit of a tightrope walk to do an album that us, but, you know, it's going to appeal to people now.
Well, let's hear about some of the ins and outs of this, too, because I think I read somewhere that this one is maybe more of a band effort that some in the past have had. And if that's the case, what was the process this time around? Was it any different than the past?
Yeah, I mean, for the last few, I guess, the last four Furs albums, it was pretty much, you know, songwriting was Richard, myself, and John Ashton, who would, you know, trade, you know, demo tapes and stuff. But on this album, we had everybody, you know, like Rich, the new guitar player, and Paul Garisto sent some ideas in. And so there's a lot more people having input, which made it easier. We have more things to choose from, you know, which, I mean, for Richard, you send him an idea. If it doesn't immediately get him to think the lyrical idea or put him in a certain frame of mind, then, you know, it's shelved for later. Not that he won't come back to it, but, you know, he's very much into, if he something grabs him immediately, you know, he can write the lyrics in really short time.
And using, I mean, you all used other family members. I mean, Richard Fortus, I think, is, you know, one of the co-producers on this record, which, of course, goes back to also Love Spit Love. Was that just, you know, bringing in other parts of the family? You know, why did you tap him to kind of also head the board?
That was good. I mean, we've known Richard Fortus since he played in a band called Pale Divine, which supported the Furs on the World Outside tour, which was the, you know, last tour we did before taking the long break. And he was an old fan from, you know, early on in our career. So he sort of, his idea of a perfect Furs album sort of helped us to handle a lot of the songs. If we'd probably, I mean, a lot of our songs could be described as being, I guess, sort of laid back, you know, as we went along in our career. And he sort of pointed out, as a major fan, what the best part for him of the Furs was. And so that's how, and he even played guitar on a couple of tracks. So it sort of helped us to remember what we were originally about and what our original, you know, sound was. And it was really cool working. As he said, it's like a sort of family. It's not, if you go in with a producer, you don't really know. It takes a while to sort of get at ease. But with Richard, it was like immediately, you know, we've known him for so long. So it was a very pleasurable experience.
With what all you all are doing here, there's so many interesting sounds throughout this record. I mean, I'll bring up Come All You Faithful. There's a lot of interesting layers to that song right there, just picking one out of the pile, too. How did that one come about?
That one, as you're talking about other people putting in ideas, that came from Rich Good, the, new guitar player. He's been with us for like 11 years. But that was one of his ideas. I think Richard immediately liked the vibe of it. He thought the vibe of it. I don't know if you've ever heard of a David Essex song called Lamplight.
Oh, right, yeah.
Where it has that really menacing, that sort of sinister, menacing sound, mm-hmm. which immediately was got Richard into the vibe of it and which direction he was going to go lyrically.
Like I said, in all the different instrumentation you're using on a track like that, there's a lot to dig into. I should also bring up the lead single too, because Don't Believe was such a solid return. I mean, when you want that classic thing but something new, I think that's what impressed everybody with that track. And if you don't mind the broad question on that one too, about the story there.
Well, that was a song that it's strange. It was a song that I'd written. It had a verse and a chorus, and I sent it to Richard, and he said to me, yeah, I like the verse part, but write another chorus. So I was beavering away, writing a different riff for the chorus. But we got to the studio and just started playing the verse riff, and it was like, well, that's all you need. That's it. It's the groove is everything on it. It came together pretty quickly. I think it was probably the last track we recorded as well.
That story happens a lot. The last track ends up being, the lead single sort of a thing. I mean, you're not always lucky that, because bands, the new track is the favorite track a lot of the time, but you're not always lucky that it ends up being a really solid actual track.
Yeah, I think that one is the one that most harkens back to, I guess, the early sort of aggression of the first, circa India, the first album.
That one, I hope you don't mind me bringing it up, because that one turns 40 years old, March 7th, I believe, the debut record that you guys did, the self-titled one there.
Really? It only seems like yesterday.
That's good, because I wanted to ask you a couple questions about it. Maybe it'll be fresh in your mind. I mean, you had only been a band, I think, 3 years at that point?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we got signed, we had only played about 40 concerts, but we would, I guess we were making a sort of a commotion in the music business and the clubs, which were used to, punk was dying because, I guess the three chord thrash had burned itself out. And we were out there playing, and we'd jam around with a song for 10 or 15 minutes. A song like India and Imitation of Christ would, go on as long as, anybody wanted to solo. And I guess record companies, we were picking up a following, and record companies was saying, hey, if they can be playing to, 1,000 to 1,500 people in London, why not worldwide? It was fresh.
But just, seeing that timeline, I mean, you went from not knowing how to play any instruments a few years before as the band started to being very seasoned in a very short time. I mean, what do you attribute that to?
A lot of rehearsals. we'd jam in, my parents' front room, or, when they threw us out because we were too loud, we'd do rehearsals without any gigs. We'd just go in and rehearse, just to have fun.
You were a little, punk might have been dying, but, having been a little bit influenced by that, the saxophone, I think, is what always caught my ear about that time, because saxophone definitely wasn't common in punk, although it was coming up in ska and sounds like that. Where did that decision come from to have that as a featured instrument in, you were a six-piece at the time?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a thing where we were getting a band together and thought, oh, we have to have a sax. Our brother, Simon, who was actually in the original band with us, went to school with Roger, the original guitar player, and Duncan Kilburn, the sax player. So when we were doing the jamming around, he would come over, and he was just learning to play saxophone. So he'd, honk away in the background. And as time went by, we all started to play better. So that's how he came to be in the band. We had sax. It wasn't a thing that we decided at the beginning. Well, we want to form a band and have a sax. It just happened. It just happened, as it went along.
It ended up being sort of, some of those defining sounds of those early years.
Yeah, and it is a defining sound. As you're saying, at that time when you get, bands playing three-chord songs, mm-hmm. About anarchy and whatever we'd be playing. It was a more of a sort of, I guess you could say, Roxy music crossed with the Stooges.
Right, right. Yeah, and again, I'll even purposely overuse this word. It was just magical, you know, the chemistry that all came to that, which is a hard thing to come by.
It is. I mean, being in the band, I don't sort of think about it much because it's just, you know, it's there. But it is a even nowadays, it's quite a different thing to have in a rock band.
Well, I love how the chemistry is still there, not even counting, you know, different people kind of coming and going, because, again, this new record, Made of Rain, is something really special.
Oh, thank you. It's been a long time coming. So.
Well, I'm glad it's happened.
It's good that it's meeting expectations.
I'll also quickly bring up, you know, I'm based here in Louisville, Kentucky, and as I read, you're not far from here, right?
Stanford, Kentucky.
Stanford. Now, that's, you know, in the middle of Kentucky, that's not where you consider a post-punk legend to reside these days. Does the community down there know what you're doing?
I mean, some people, but you walk into a restaurant sometimes and people sort of recognize me. But, you know, it's not a hotbed of new music.
Oh, I've always enjoyed kind of knowing that you guys, because you've played up here in Louisville a couple times in the past few years, once, I think twice and everything, and I caught one of those shows at the Mercury Ballroom, and I don't know if that's one of those shows where you get to keep the house keys in your pockets or not, but, you know, it's kind of cool having you this close.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I've been here probably 12 years, and I married the reason I'm down here is I met my wife, who's born in Liberty, Kentucky, mm-hmm. On MySpace.
Oh, wow.
She's after a few months of, like, you know, me flying down here to see her and her flying up to where I was living in South Jersey at the time. She said, well, why don't you, you know, come down? You're not tied down to any particular city because of your job. Why don't you come down and move in with me? So here I am, moved down here.
It's a different place.
I love it because it's for years I lived on Manhattan Island. Mm-hmm. And I know it's the city that never sleeps, but if you want to sleep and you're paying outrageous rent on an apartment, you know, on Manhattan Island, it's just, you're just wasting money.
Right.
So when I decided, you know, I was no longer the nightlife person, it was perfect time to move out. And down here, it's very like where Rich and I grew up in England, in the countryside, you know, farms and all around.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons I stick around here, too. It's a travel lot. The hotels are expensive. It's nice coming back home.
Yeah. no place like home.
Tim, it's been such a pleasure and really an honor to talk to you. Thank you so much for taking the time today. The new Psychedelic Furs album, Made of Rain, I love it. So I'm absolutely so happy that you guys are still doing this after all this time.
Well, thank you. And it makes it, to hear that makes it worthwhile having done it.
It was a pleasure talking to you. Take care, man.
Thanks, Kyle. You too.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Huge thing. Tim Butler, the Psychedelic Furs, the new record is called Made of Rain. And thanks to you for checking out the episode. Again, if you're not already a subscriber, I do hope you do that before you get out of here, especially if you enjoyed listening to what you just heard. We do that multiple times a week, so you might as well jump on board. iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Podchaser, Acast, Stitcher, NPR.org, wherever you get your podcast from. You can type in Kyle Meredith With, and that's where you'll find us. After that, head to WFPK.org, and that's where I do a show Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's an hour full of song premieres and music news, anniversary spins, and bonus interviews. Again, that's WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound has your music and film news. You can also find me on just about any social media platform, all the major ones anyway, at Kyle Meredith. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.